are not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing Americans the kind of help that they need. I've got a pen and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward.
I know it's from 2016, but do you remember when President Obama in March of 2016 said, I've got a phone and I've got a pen, and I can make some calls and I can write some executive actions, and it seemed outrageous at the time that he would legislate through the White House, until you saw what Joe Biden did in his first 2 weeks in office. Oh, my God. Joining us now, Matt Gaetz. He is our congressman from Northwest Florida District 1. Matt, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News. Who knew you could do so much with no legislative input whatsoever?
Joe Biden is breaking records with the executive order pen, and it does show the, I think, fragility of action that occurs without working through the Congress, right? You know, President Trump also used the executive order rather robustly. Mm-hmm. A lot of the immigration changes, asylum changes that were very effective occurred through executive order. But if you just sign it in that way, then it can be signed out that way. And I think it shows the value in the permanence of working on legislation through the Congress.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with you. And, you know, we've seen this with the wall. We've seen this with the Mexico policy for abortion support, in foreign nations. We're seeing this across the board with a lot of things that, you know, supporters like. But then guess what? It can go away as soon as somebody else is in office. But then that brings us to the other thing, which is legislation is more enduring. It's more of a cooperative process. But what if that legislation goes through a very narrowly divided Senate, either with getting rid of the filibuster rule or through reconciliation? I'm very concerned about this, and maybe it's worth, before answering, can you maybe just explain to people for a second why the threat of using reconciliation is so concerning right now?
Well, normally you need 60 votes in the Senate to do anything, because that's what goes past a filibuster that one member can lodge. The budget reconciliation process allows the Senate to act with only 50 votes, 51 votes, obviously with the vice president breaking the tie. Usually that is just for budgeting, but both parties have used the reconciliation process for major policy changes. The Democrats used it to pass Obamacare originally. The Republicans used it for tax reform under President Trump, and now it looks like Joe Biden is going to use it as an end run around the filibuster. So both parties have done this. I think that the Republicans did it less effectively because we were unable to get health care reform done through any type of budget reconciliation. The Democrats did that. And I think now you'll see a lot of the universal basic income policies, a lot of the policies the Democrats have wanted for some time, cloaked in the imprimatur of coronavirus response. Anything they want to do now is going to be deemed, well, this is necessary because of COVID. And I think that you're going to see Democrats act without having to hit that 60-vote threshold, which means they will be able to act without Republican votes.
So it's not even fair to call it a conspiracy theory because it's in the open now, but The one that has me the most concerned, okay, I understand about these wranglings and the back and forth of the pendulum as power shifts. I'm more concerned about something like D.C. statehood, potentially Puerto Rico statehood, permanently shifting the balance of power in the Senate the Democrats' way. And if that's stuff that gets accomplished by reconciliation, I don't know how to fight this. Are you concerned? Am I overly concerned about this?
I think that's less likely than coronavirus response operating through reconciliation. Those major policy changes like court packing, new states being added to the union, I think it is just far less likely than reconciliation will be used because those are so beyond the budgeting process. There is a process that policy changes have to go through under review of the Senate parliamentarian to see if they qualify for reconciliation. And I think it's going to be more about the spending of money than the realigning of power.
So they will at least stick somewhat to the issue of money. I mean, you know, the $15 minimum wage strikes me as being outside of budgetary issues, but it at least deals with money, right?
Again, I think it's more about how our government spends money, right? Like, our government spends money on healthcare. Our government spends money on the coronavirus response. The minimum wage is about how the private sector spends money with their workforce, and I think that would probably be deemed out of bounds by the Senate parliamentarian.
Since we're kind of talking about obviously the issue of the coronavirus package, the Republicans are offering a $600 billion alternative to the $1,900 billion Biden proposal. When I think of this, I think of either spending the GDP of Georgia or the GDP of Texas at $1.7 trillion versus $630 billion or some odd. These numbers are just mind-boggling to me to talk about in some kind of a relief package. I mean, is any of this spending really feasible for America's economy right now?
Well, it is just an enormous amount of Fed policy, printing of money, borrowing of money. My concern is that at some point you start to devalue the dollar and you send our nation into an inflation cycle that it could be hard to get out of. And during that inflation, people that are punished most are those with cash, those who have saved money their whole lives and then they see that savings devalued. Those who are in cash flow and assets actually do quite well in inflation. So there's ways to plan for it, but there certainly would be many of our fellow Americans that would be caught up in a very negative economic cycle. So I'm deeply concerned about it. I have voted against these just enormous spending packages, because I think we should see how the economy responds to opening up, to getting the vaccine deployed. There's no federal government policy that could ever be better for the economy than an open economy.
Right.
And I worry that some of this spending just continues to allow us to live in the world of perpetual lockdown.
Yeah, no, I very much agree. And, of course, we've talked about this before, and I've agreed with you the whole time. It's just I still try to wrap my brain around we're either going to spend two-thirds of our entire military budget in the stroke of a pen or two times our military budget in additional spending. It's crazy talk. Congressman, you traveled to Wyoming to basically try to get Liz Cheney out of leadership and eventually out of Congress entirely. I know a lot of constituents, the reaction they have is, yay, go Matt. I know a lot of other constituents, their reaction is, why on earth are you going to Wyoming do stuff for your district? For those folks, how would you respond?
I do a lot for my district. And a day in Wyoming, I think, serves the people in our district who would like to see the Cheney ideology run out of the Republican Party. This isn't personal. It's not that I dislike Liz as a human being. She advocates for the forever wars that are deeply painful in our district. You know, I've been fighting against our country's excessive involvement in Middle Eastern conflicts. You know, Liz Cheney is always trying to frustrate my efforts to draw down troops, to have a more focused foreign policy. And so I went to Wyoming, you know, not really to even give a speech about impeachment, but instead to speak about my view on U.S. engagement abroad. And, you know, the nation building that Liz Cheney favors in other countries, you know, really causes home wrecking in Northwest Florida when we are pinned down in some of the worst places in the world for decades upon decades.
Meanwhile, a little bit closer to home in Georgia, the other big news story of the week is the beliefs and strangeness of Marjorie Taylor Greene. Obviously, it was a target of Saturday Night Live over the weekend as well. People might ask the question, well, if you're going to try to get rid of Liz Cheney, should you also be trying to get rid of Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't want to send any of my constituents to, you know, additional tours of duty in Afghanistan. You know, that's Liz Cheney. Marjorie Taylor Greene actually has a very focused view of foreign policy. Now, I know she said some things online that are curious and strange. Frankly, I think if you look at everybody's statements online, there are probably a few things you could find that are off-putting. Probably the same even about my own statements online. I think as a congresswoman, Marjorie has operated differently than she did as someone who made incendiary videos for the internet. Her constituents overwhelmingly elected her to serve in the body, and I think we ought to judge her based on her conduct in the body, which, you know, thus far hasn't been offensive or troubling to me.
You're very close to President Trump even still. In fact, when you're in Wyoming, you mentioned that you had talked to him recently. Do you have any insight that you're allowed to say about what you think he's going to do next?
I think that President Trump is eager to build out additional platforms. You know, whether that's a social media platform, a political platform, I think he sees quite clearly the dangers of this cancel culture because he's really the most canceled man in America right now as the former president. And so I think that building out those methods of communication will occupy some of his time in the immediate future.
And the last thing I was going to ask you about, I know impeachment is upcoming. Feel free to comment if you like. But I sometimes fail to ask the question, which is, what do you see coming that your constituents here, that our listeners would want to know about, maybe that I even fail to think of to ask you about?
Well, in the beginning months of the Trump presidency, we had a real buildup of the military. We got out of sequestration, out of the trading a defense dollar for a domestic dollar. I mean, we did what we had to do. That resulted in huge benefits to Northwest Florida, new aircraft, new classrooms, new hangar systems, new buildings all over our district. Now with Joe Biden, we see this huge increase in domestic spending that we discussed on the program, but it remains to be seen how the military will be treated. And so I'm working very hard, even with members of the incoming Biden administration, to understand that vision and to ensure that no matter who the president is, that Northwest Florida is well positioned for a contribution to the fight that is in keeping with our history and with our patriotism. So that's really kind of the nuts and bolts day in, day out work that ensures that quality of life in Northwest Florida continues to be great.
Yeah, no, the military strength is obviously important to our district, both in terms of national security and in terms of local economic impact. So we appreciate that. Matt Gaetz is our congressman for District 1, Northwest Florida. Congressman, thanks again so much for the time. We'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Andrew.